Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The treadmill, a perfect symbol for going nowhere, until one band wrote a bunch of them to international fame. This is Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer, and today, music as a visual art. Their videos made OK Go's music a global phenomenon, and TV has inspired one of the strangest albums in veteran Graham Parker's long career. But we'll hear first from OK Go, the power pop quartet who practically invented the so-called viral video when they performed this song on 8 treadmills in one take with one video camera. Now viewed over 50 million times, it remains one of the landmark moments in musical and internet history. So, what do they do for an encore? How about turning a two-story building into a giant Rube Goldberg contraption? Working with the same engineers who built the Mars rover. The band's elaborate video for the song This Too Shall Pass cost a lot of time, a fair amount of money, and one recording contract. We'll learn the story and hear the band playing that song live for us in a moment. Guitarist Andrew Ross and bass player Tim Nordwind are here. Lead singer Damian Kulash has pulled up a microphone. And guys, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having us. It's great to be back.
So this new video for This Too Shall Pass... engineers from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Tell us, Damian, what the idea was behind this.
Well, I mean, it's pretty simple. We wanted to make a Rube Goldberg machine, and we wanted to make one that lined up with the music. We wanted the machine to be dancing, effectively. And to our knowledge, we'd never seen a Rube Goldberg machine that was time based that way. There's many, many great Rube Goldberg contraptions out there, but so we
thought. And for people who don't know Rube Goldberg,
it's like the game Mousetrap when you're a kid. It's like, you know, the chain of events reaction where you knock over the dominoes and the dominoes hit a ball and the ball falls off the table and hits the tea kettle and, you know, so forth.
Right, and the idea is to make a simple task as incredibly elaborate and difficult as possible.
Yes, indeed.
And which you seem to have done.
yeah. That's not limited to this video. But we thought, you know, we knew we wouldn't be working with much of a budget, and we figured we'll look for, you know, we're pretty tied into a lot of pretty nerdy communities, and we figured, you know, we put the call out to our friends, see if we could get someone to work for us for a month or two, maybe find a warehouse space somewhere, and you know, just like go wild, have as much fun with physics as possible. And I put together a 2-paragraph job posting, basically. And within 2 days, we got a proposal from a group of 15 engineers who wanted to do it all together. And we're like, we can't afford 15 engineers. And they basically were just like, look, we'll figure out the money thing. We have to do this. So the group is called Syn Labs. In fact, the group's name, I think, came to exist during this project, because it was a bunch of people who there's a sort of technology and science-y art party that happens in Los Angeles once a month called Mindshare, and it's a bunch of friends from this sort of group of nerds,
and you're tied. The band OK Go is like the,
oh, we are of the same nerds.
Party with nerds.
Yeah. So that group of people sort of a lot of different walks of life, but all kind of you know, sciencey or mm-hmm. mathy.
People who could make this idea work.
People who could make this idea work.
So you said you thought maybe this would take a month. It took how long?
All in about 6 months. It took about a month and a half, actually, to get the whole team together and find out even in kind of what the basic idea was in terms of design. I mean, splitting up a project of this enormity over lots of people gets really difficult, because we essentially in the end had to break the song up into 6-second chunks and design each one of them roughly, and then, you know, get more specific with it.
And How much did it cost, and who ended up paying for this?
It cost a little over $150,000, which I'm not even sure I'm supposed to say, but I just said it. So, and it was paid for by State Farm, who are known, of course, for their long history in the music business.
So not by your record company, but by an insurance company. Why?
It's sort of the old-fashioned patronage of the arts version of advertising. I think that they really are wise enough to see that a bunch of product placements and really sort of forced tie-ins don't work on people. And mm-hmm. Those things work less and less, which is great for artists because we're always looking for some way to fund the things we want to make. And we're consistently faced with that'd be great as long as you make it into this really, really cheesy ad for us. And this sort of kills the whole idea. So I think advertisers and marketers and stuff are starting to realize that we all have enough marketing savvy that no one falls for that really. And
so then what was in it for State Farm?
10, 15 million views in a week. Their logo is at the top of it. I mean, fairly tastefully, and we put a thank you plaque at the end, and that was all worked out in advance. We're like, we will show your logo for this amount of time. Otherwise, it's entirely ours.
Right.
There was a clause in it where they could veto anything that was that was aggressively anti them. At one point, one part of the machine I think had an arrow that was going to shoot someone in the face. And they
took that personally.
They actually never saw that. We were like, we don't want to risk having this talk with them. So I think we had the arrow shoot a balloon instead or something. It wasn't it wasn't a big deal. But a very tasteful thank you at the end. And
right.
The thing is, major labels, they're giant corporations too. And for the last, as long as I've known anything about the music industry and my parents have known anything about the music industry, they have been the sort of sponsors of most large projects in music. I mean, mm-hmm. obviously there's lots of ways to make music without a major label, but...
Well, that was not so obvious until recent years, though.
Well, that's true. I mean, I'm saying, obviously, given the current state of affairs, but... The thing is that it took us a while to sort of come to this, and we were very scared going into the deal with State Farm because it's scary to get in bed with a big corporation, but working with corporate money that doesn't think that they're doing the creative work as well was a lot easier than working mm-hmm. with a big corporation who think they're there to service art and so therefore think that they get to make the art and think that it's all sort of their project.
Right. So you didn't have that sort of editorial control over your shoulder from this particular fund.
Not at all. And I mean, if you think about it, since 1983 or whenever it was that MTV started, it basically videos have been made by the dudes sitting at the top of record labels. I mean, they are advertisements made for the music, right? Or that's how they were seen then. And so nothing could be a hit without a big video, and the big videos were all made essentially by dudes in offices somewhere who hire the right director, pick the right idea, and so you can't really blame these big corporations for thinking that they made the art because more or less they did.
Hmm. Damien Kulash from OK Go, Andrew Ross and Tim Nordwind from the band also here with us in the studio. We're talking so far about this amazing video. If you have somehow missed it, there is a link on the Soundcheck page. Just go to wnyc.org/soundcheck. You can join the 12 or so million people who viewed it so far. And it's getting up. Is it getting up towards the 50 million mark where the first video, here it goes again?
Yeah, I mean, as they say, the hits don't stop coming.
Yeah.
You can't subtract the views, luckily.
I can't take them away. Yeah.
We are actually very curious to see what the sort of life cycle of it is.
Well, that's going to be interesting because, it's on YouTube, and we can talk about this. One of the things that broke up you guys from your record label was the idea of making it embeddable so that it can be everywhere. So how do you can't possibly aggregate all of the views in all of the places where the video is. It's going to be hard to get that kind of number again, it seems.
Yeah, I think, we really didn't think that there was any approaching the treadmill in terms of its sort of like numerical or right. cultural impact. And we're, you know, frankly, you know, very pleasantly surprised that this is as huge as it has been.
Well, let's hear the song that has spawned the video. We're speaking with the band OK Go. And if you've seen the video, if you have a comment, leave it on the Soundcheck page, wnyc.org/soundcheck. But here is the song, This Too Shall Pass, in an unplugged version here in the Soundcheck studio. Two Shall Pass, song by the band OK Go, and a live acoustic, unplugged performance here in the Soundcheck studio. Damian Kulash singing, playing guitar. It would be literally correct if I said Andrew Ross was also singing and playing the guitar, although he's basically thumping on the back of the guitar, treating it like a percussion instrument. And Tim Nordwind, the band's bassist normally, playing the glockenspiel yes. today. And singing as well. Do any of you guys, we have two commenters on the Soundcheck page asking essentially the same question. Do you guys know this 1987 art video by Fishley and Vice called The Way Things Go?
Yes, it's before the 80s. I think it's 1970, late 70s. Yeah, Fishley and Vice, it's a long Rube Goldberg machine as well. Shot on film. There are a bunch of edits in it simply because I think film cartridges didn't go long enough for it. It's about 30 minutes or 28 minutes, something like that.
It's wow. beautiful.
It's really beautiful. Yeah.
Did that inspire what you guys did here?
Oh, we certainly looked. I mean, you know, once we had decided to do this, we went looking for every Rube Goldberg machine we could find, just to, you know, because first of all, they're so fun to watch. I mean, there's nothing that sort of brings out that same sense of wonder and I can't believe it-ness.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That one, a lot of things that does that we couldn't do, there's a lot of fire and a lot of chemical stuff, which those are just incredibly hard to time. So since we needed ours to stay within, you know, 2%.
That's why you didn't go for the fire and the chemicals, for the timing, not for any safety reasons.
Oh, no. Yeah, I
safety
wanted,
third.
Like, that safety third was the motto of the whole thing. And I wanted to get thrown across the room, for instance, I was pretty bummed that I had to use the zip line. Like, I really wanted to get thrown across the room. I mean, I get, you know, during the video, I get hurled across. There's a giant slingshot that shoots me across the warehouse, but for safety reasons, I had to be on a zip line. And the fire, we would have gone for the fire and chemicals, but you can't time them.
Okay.
So that's one thing. Oh, there are a few things from it we tried to use. There's a big tire sequence, which is very similar to one in the Fishley and Vice piece. The most inspiring Rube Goldberg machines, or the ones that inspired us the most, are actually from a Japanese show called, it's Pythagoras Switch, essentially. I'm not going to try to say it in Japanese. It's like Pythagoritu Switch or something, but it's, well, I guess I did just try it. But it's...
And now people who speak two different languages are scratching their heads going, what did he just say?
Yeah. It's essentially Sesame Street, I think. I don't know much about the show, but they start every episode, or there is a segment during every episode where they have these sort of miniature, very, very precise little Rube Goldberg machines that are just unbelievably inspired. Yeah. I mean, they're so ingenious. We found the biggest collection of them on break.com, I think it was. Mm-hmm. But look at
that break?
Break, BREAK.
Okay.
Com. There was a 25-ish minute compilation of them, and it's your jaw just drops and drops and drops and drops.
Well, there's a moment in your Rube Goldberg contraption for the video for the song that we just heard, This Too Shall Pass, where I guess it's a sledgehammer goes through the screen of a television as the television is playing the treadmill video from the first viral video. Here it goes again. Now, you know, 50 million views for that video. You're over 12 or 13 million already for this one. Do you guys ever worry that the video is going to overshadow, that it's going to somehow eclipse the songs themselves?
Not really. I mean, I kind of feel like that's sort of like being like, are you worried that your records are taking away from your live performance? You know, it's like, I think if we saw these videos in the sort of old fashioned label way as advertisements for a separate product, some sort of imbalance between them would be really threatening.
So you don't see it that way. It's not. You know.
I mean, this is all sort of this whole thing is our creative baby. And, you know, there's lots of ways to look at it. One of them is that there's lots of people making great 45-minute records. And when a new great album comes out, people get excited about it, but they aren't like, oh my God, have you seen there's a record out? You know?
Yeah.
But when bands make their own video, I mean, this is, not many bands are doing this. You know?
But you know, you have 50 million views. That's not necessarily going to sell the 45-minute record. I mean, you know, for example, with Here It Goes Again, you know, 800 some odd thousand sales of the song, which is strong, but, you know, 50 million views. So I guess the question is, how is the model working for you?
Take a look around the rest of the industry. There's nothing that's going to sell CDs. I mean, people don't buy CDs. That's not how people think of music anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, taking it back a level from even that, the way we think about the very like sort of compartments and terms of music and of culture in general are largely defined by the distribution system that we've been using for the last, you know, 80 years.
Mm-hmm.
So what is a single? What is, you know, what is a an album, or what is a video? All these things, like, you know, using videos as examples. There was this really, a very tight environment for videos for 25 years in which you had it had no reason to exist if it wasn't on MTV, because nobody else could see it. And MTV was only going to play a very, very, very small number of videos, and they had to be a very particular thing. So you get this sort of like, you know, incredible evolutionary pressure on that whole cultural form to turn into one thing, mm-hmm. right? When that model breaks down, all sorts of new creativity can flourish. And so, you know, like, I don't particularly care if people if people want to make the what seem to us like arbitrary distinctions between like what format we're making we're chasing our ideas in, you know, like.
So do you see? I mean, it almost sounds like maybe you're thinking of this band not just as a music band, but almost like performance artists, where the video is one branch of it.
I guess. I mean, that term sort of.
I know performance. Yeah. Nobody likes that. It's.
But what would you have called Elvis a performance artist because of his hips, or Jimi Hendrix because he lit his guitar on fire? I mean, when Jimi Hendrix lit his guitar on fire, there were no lyrics, no beats, no chords, no melody. You know, it that's not an act of quote-unquote music, right? But it's the most rock and roll thing he ever did. Mm-hmm. And I sort of feel like the idea that we have this term music, which is so limited, when in fact, like, no one has been making purely beats and chords for 100 years. So it's more about, like, chasing exciting ideas wherever they go. And obviously it all starts for us with songwriting, but that's not where it ends.
Right. You know? So what is the model? I mean, is there a new business model where the kind of incredible success you guys have had online can translate into some kind of, I mean, how do you monetize it, if I can be so crass?
Well, I mean, there's lots of ways. I mean, first of all, you know, our shows are well attended. We sell a lot of merchandise. We do a lot of licensing. So we're, you know, like, we're in a lot of movies and we're a lot of commercials and actually, back it up for a second. Any band who has been paying their rent for the last 10 years and isn't Green Day or Madonna or U2, already knows how to make a living without record sales. Mm-hmm. Because nobody on a major label is getting any money from those record sales. I mean, this is not a comment on the industry. It's just that what they did was they bet on 20 things, and the one that succeeds has to pay for the 19 that fails, right? So your bands are never going to see that money. So the fact that we've been around for a decade as a band means we already knew how to, you know, like, we were already making money somewhere else. And now, the label sort of trained us how to live without record sales, you know?
We're speaking with the members of OK Go, Damian Kulash mostly. The new CD is called Of the Blue Color of the Sky. The band is at the Music Hall of Williamsburg tonight. That's sold out. And here's just a little bit from the album to take us into the break. The band is OK Go. The song is called All Is Not Lost. In a moment, more with the music video Revolutionaries, OK Go. And then coming up later on Soundcheck, a different take on media manipulation. British rocker Graham Parker talks about a new album called Imaginary Television, later on Soundcheck.
They're advertising the things that you've been through.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We've been talking about music and video and the music video business with the members of the band OK Go. Their latest album is called Of the Blue Color of the Sky and has spawned yet another video that has swept through the internet. There's a link to it in case you've somehow missed it at wnyc.org/soundcheck. And singer-guitarist Damian Kulash is going to perform this next song for us solo here in the Soundcheck studio. This is also from the new album. It's a song called Last Leaf.
If you should be the last autumn leaf hanging from the tree, I'll still be here waiting on the breeze to bring you down to me. And if it takes forever, I'll still be here, waiting on the rain to warm your heart for me. And if it takes forever, forever it'll be. And if it takes forever, forever it'll be.
The song's called Last Leaf. It appears on the new OK Go record called Of the Blue Color of the Sky. Damian Kulash from the band doing a solo performance here in the Soundcheck studio. Will there be a video for this one,
yes,
too? So is the plan to do one video per song on the new record?
No, the plan is to chase the ideas as far as we can. We'd love it if we hit all the songs, but it's we'd much rather make good ones than make lots of them. so if we can find the time and the money and we don't run out of good ideas, then absolutely.
Well, in terms of finding the time and the money, you guys are on your own now. You parted ways with EMI in part because of this huge Rube Goldberg contraption. That is one of the things it effectively did, was, you know.
Well, sort of. I mean, I think that had something to do with it. I'm not really allowed to talk about the specifics, of course, but more or less we were headed a very different direction than the whole major label industry is, and it wasn't ours in particular. It's just, you know, the metric of success for major labels, in fact, the building block of their business has always been sales of their master recordings. And that is, you know, that's primarily CDs, sometimes online. For us, it doesn't matter where the rent money comes from as long as we get to chase our ideas, you know.
And to make music, sometimes your own and sometimes other people's. We're actually going to conclude with your cover of a song from the Pixies. The song is Gigantic. The new album by OK Go is called Of the Blue Color of the Sky. And while their show in Brooklyn is sold out tonight, you can catch them Sunday at the Meadowlands as part of the Bamboozle Festival and performing at Late Night with Jimmy Fallon on Tuesday the 4th. Guys, thanks so much for coming in and playing for us this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And still to come, British rocker Graham Parker is known for classic albums like Squeezing Out Sparks. Now he's cornering the market on theme songs for fake TV shows. Find out more in a moment. This is Soundcheck.